Hello, and thank you for tuning into the Attack and Release Show. My name is Matt, and I am joined today by my good friend from Nashville, Sam Moses.
Howdy do.
Yes, howdy do.
It's me.
It's Sam.
Okay.
The topic of today is more of a question, something Sam and I have been talking a couple weeks on, and we want your direct feedback. We're interested in, you know, more than just us dialoguing. Let's enter into a larger conversation and kind of like a where is everything headed kind of deal. But the premise, the question, the investigation of today's episode is revolving around the question of, is there a bubble in the music industry? But before we get to that, Sam, why don't you take us into a little bit of housekeeping?
Woohoo! Housekeeping! Hello, listener, audience, friend. Thank you so much for tuning into another episode with us. Truly a gift. We love getting to know our community, which is the whole point of housekeeping. So if you would help us out, y'all have been so nice. Screenshot this episode, post it on Instagram, tag me, Moses Mastering, tag Matt for the record mastering. We will reshare your posts. It's called cross-marketing. It works. Also, we get to know you one-on-one, which is dope. We get to find out what you're doing, what you're up to. We ask questions, we learn from each other, and we all make better records together. So do us a solid. Screenshot this episode, share it, please. Then like and subscribe. That goes a long way. Leave some stars, a review. Really helps us out. Takes you 30 seconds. 30 seconds of your day is all we're asking for your help. And in return, you get hundreds of hours of content and you probably get cool community. So that's housekeeping.
Peace out, Seacrest.
All right. So I kind of want to hop into this. We're starting about 10 or so minutes late because Sam and I got lost on a conversation that was very interesting and enlightening and eye-opening, and it was great. I want to apologize for it, but we do want to get to this episode. So let's kind of define what a bubble is. I can tee you up or I can talk.
I want you to talk about it first.
Okay. So let's just kind of like cover like a bubble right now.
Yeah.
And like not what we are, and it's not even like what we are seeing. It's a question that we are asking. And I don't think it's an ill-sought question. I don't think it's a clickbait question. I'm not trying to be prophetic or any bit of that sort. But there is a question that should be asked, because of the nature of the music industry in regards to a bubble. And so, essentially, paraphrasing, a bubble is a cycle. And it's a part of a cycle that is generally characterized by like intense escalation, typically of a market. And normally, it's around like an escalation of market value, specifically the price of something, typically an asset. People say that there is a bubble around, say, like universities, especially when you get into a lot of the, you know, the student loan situation, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, a lot of the lending institutions. Some of you might remember the bubble with, you know, the housing market, the, what was it, the 08 housing bubble. We were talking about that earlier with a handful of people in the office and kind of what that was like. Some of y'all might remember early 2000s, the dot-com bubble, and then others, you know, previous. And so you can kind of see how some of that is can have its own devastation and its own lasting and long-term effects until essentially you can get some restabilization in whatever market it is. It could be the whole market, which the housing market did affect the whole market. And I mean, you know, and what we say is, you know, sometimes one thing affects all things. It's like housing is so like big of a topic and so big of an economic mover that that one thing did end up affecting everything. And I mean, it really shaped, I would say, like, as far as like, say, like millennials, Gen X, and I mean, even kind of like retiring, say, like people of the boomer generation, I would say, like, it would probably screwed up a lot of retirements for people, probably screwed up a lot of career paths. And it's like me, I was just getting out of college, kind of like around the beginning of the recession. And it's like, you know, there's just kind of like nothing there. And so I don't necessarily want to get into like, what does this look like if there is a boom, like post-boom? But I more want to like enter into a conversation and a topic surrounding, like, do we see something that's kind of inflation-y? Something that kind of looks like there's inflation here. And I'm not trying to really hint on, like, trigger words or, like, not trying to, like, make anybody upset by saying something. But there are some, like, interesting trends that I do think we should like chat on. When I say inflation, it's essentially like, it's like the rate of increase of, generally it's the rate of increase of prices over a given period of time. And we're not talking about money in this episode. I think we're more talking about assets. We're talking about people. We're talking about artists. And we're talking about music and how it's consumed and or not being consumed at the same time. So, Sam, do you want to interject at all or you want to, you know, scoot on?
No, that's great. I think we can scoot on.
All right. What would you say, like, let's kind of like condense the past, like, I don't know, however many weeks you and I have been talking about this into a general thought as far as what this bubble is that we're chatting about. And if you say some stuff that I also am like, I think it's over here, it's like, I think this is very much like a dialogue kind of a conversation, very much not like monologue.
Great.
And this is just opinions. And so it's like no means to like offend anybody by this conversation, but it might get dicey.
Dicey. Dicey conversation. I think the bubble, the first thing I feel that comes to my head when we talk about this bubble is like there is unsustainability, and then also the concept of that you've talked about and we've talked about is racing to the bottom. The bubble of music, to me a bubble is almost, you know, usually like when something costs too much, or like the price is too high versus its actual
true value.
That's
a great way of putting it.
You know, it's kind of like economical bubble. That's like the, oh, well, the 08 recession was a number of things, but,
yeah,
you know, but I think for the music industry, where we are headed is fully unsustainable, and the devaluation of music is going to pop the industry, I think, pop the bubble that is music. I think on some level, the more we talk about this concept, I almost feel like the bubble popped a while ago. When I think about when I got to Nashville, I met a lot of engineers who are 10 or 15 years beyond me in age and experience. Mm-hmm. And they talked about, and still do talk about, like this golden era almost, mm-hmm, of music where budgets were large, the rush wasn't, you know, there, records were made, you know, in the studio, they stayed in the studio, they got approved in the studio, then they got released. You know, there was kind of like this guarantee that the record would be a competitor or a hit because there's only so many records that are signed by the labels. And independent really wasn't a thing, and independent didn't really have a place on the radio at all, mm-hmm, at that time, and there wasn't streaming really. And then big box CD places, you basically bought your shelf space to put your CD there, and the random person probably couldn't afford that, essentially to like rent out your top shelf at Best Buy, you know, when you walk in. So the more we talk about this, I almost feel like the bubble popped a while ago, And maybe like 10, like when I really got to Nashville, so going on 11 years ago, and maybe between 10 and 15 years ago, the music industry was in a bubble where like there was just money to be made everywhere. It was predictable. They had a formula. They knew they could move X amount of units by getting it into Best Buy or these places. They knew they could get it on the radio, X, Y, and Z, get this many plays. They knew how many records were coming out because they controlled them all. And by they, I mean like labels, you know, and just entertainment companies as a whole, the much larger parent companies. And so I think for me, it almost feels like the bubble popped and now we're in this collapse almost.
Well, do you say that or do you think we're in like that was just another paradigm? And it's like, I wouldn't say that like the music industry could have like several bubbles. It's like you Absolutely. Look over the course of just like world history and bubbles that have happened.
Yeah.
And like recessions or depressions or whatever it is. And it's like, it could just be like another, like that could be like noted as one.
Yeah.
Because in order for like a bubble to like occur.
Yeah.
And it's like, I'm on like Investopedia right now. you know, like a source, I suppose. It's like, it's like there needs to be some type of a paradigm
yeah.
shift.
I
and
think
so that,
that yeah,
could have been, you know, when you had like a lot of like the bedroom producers, the,
right. the digital.
A lot of the, like, we'll call it like the indie wave.
Yeah.
Really come in and like they were able to kind of make a name for themselves, you know, like on these streaming platforms, right about at the same like market share as like major labels and
right.
stuff. Really, I wouldn't say was like hidden per se. You just weren't known about unless you had a way to promote it.
Right. Yeah. Once the internet happened, you know, on a social media kind of, you know, MySpace music was huge. I found so many bands via MySpace and then a website called Pure Volume. You know, and a lot of bands broke that were independent, broke in a good way. They broke into the scene via those early days of putting their song up on their website, you know, or on their MySpace or on Pure Volume. And then it would start like charting based on popularity within that site. And then I would see those people on tour, you know, or get signed, you know, and be with the bigger bands at the time. I think, you know, the paradigm shift was digital. And then, you know, the bedroom producers having the capability and accessibility to create. And now I do think, you know, now that you're saying that, yeah, like bubble number two is happening, you know, of like the digital and the accessibility and AI and the ability to create almost, you know, a song instantly now, especially with some of the AI tech is just going to pop the next digital bubble, which I feel like on some level, now I'm freaking myself out. I've ridden.
You're getting freaked out now.
I'm getting freaked out now. I've ridden the digital bubble, you know, in my career. Like I came into mastering having the luxury to essentially take the risk to be like, I'm going to work in the box on my laptop and not a mastering room to start. And a lot of mastering guys who I looked up to or would interact with in town who had the big facilities would be like, that's not mastering. Like, it's not, like, you can't do it. And I just remember being like, I'm doing it, you know? And I rode that wave, which allowed me to go very far now, you know, 14 years later. And now, with the way mastering, has been kind of hijacked, I feel like, over the last few years. And then the constant attempt of AI mastering and the confusion that comes with that and just the kind of trail of debris for the last 4 or 5 years that has come from the internet, from people just essentially giving misinformation as well as then just cranking the dial on people figuring out, oh, the more songs I put out, the more content I put out, that's really what gets me attention and money is just cranking out things to feed the algorithm and the beast because it responds to that over instead of responding to quality, it's really responding to quantity The consumer likes shock. The consumer likes new instant gratification. It likes new songs every week. You know, it doesn't really care about records. We've been trained to be obsessed with playlists now, which is just like a single song from somebody as opposed to like waiting for a record. And I do see that we are very much, you know, in this theory, like on bubble number two of like the digital age of music, I think. And I do think it's going to pop, or is popping or leaking already, because of the unsustainability and demand that is required to even, quote unquote, compete in the industry as an artist and a creator. It's not going to end well, especially, we don't have to talk too much about this, but AI is in the Wild West. It's going to be so scary good. I mean, this week I sent you a company that I'm not even going to say online because I don't want people knowing about it yet. But it basically just creates songs that sound pretty darn good, full-on songs of any genre, any prompting. And, you know, it's not quite there yet, but it's, I don't know, 85% there. And it just
started. It sounded pretty good to me.
Yeah. And especially just instrumentals. If you don't use vocals, instrumentals are crazy good.
Lyrics, if you melodies, wouldn't have told me that, if you wouldn't have told me that it was AI, I would have just thought it was like some client you're sharing with me.
Yeah. And it's really scary good. And it's like version one, basically. And so we are really going to have an interesting go over the next few years of what it means to, A, be human, and does that matter? What it means to be a creator? What is original, like, creation? What does that mean? The government, I think, will need to step in. Labels will hopefully go to bat for creators, but I feel like they're going to not, and they're going to embrace AI.
I mean,
AI,
they don't right now, so.
And embrace digital artists.
I wouldn't see why they would.
AKA just AI artists. This is the oddly disturbing thing to me with this company of the music that just cranks out songs. I have found myself already liking some of the songs that it's spitting out, where I have been like, who is this? And then I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm the one who typed it in. Like, it's no one.
I made it.
It does. Yeah. It's a robot. I prompted this so well, and it has such a mimic of what I'm used to hearing for pop that I'm like, who's this artist? And they don't exist. So that's a bit of a existential feeling for me of like, what is art? What does it mean to be human? Does it matter to me if it was a human or not? Because this song's tight. Like, this is a cool song. You know, like,
did I work on this?
Yeah, like, but that was weird too, is I got a feeling internally. I've been addicted to the site the last 3 days, just like prompting it. I'm becoming like a prompt king. I was joking with a buddy of like, there's going to be a new category of audio credits called like AI prompter. Like, who was the guy who typed in the prompt or girl? And, you know, to generate the general song or the song in general. But it's just fascinating. The better you get at learning how it learns, just like with ChatGPT, you can just start dialing in the, you know, the artificialness out of it. So it's a really powerful tool, but I feel like with the bubble and AI is going to, I think, pop this bubble. And it's going to be messy because it's too late to regulate this stuff.
It affects everybody too.
It affects everybody, every industry, but for creators, my goodness, these songs that this software is cranking out is better than a lot of what I get. The performances, the vocals themselves sound cheesy, but the performance of the vocal is crazy. It is more real sounding than a real person. You know, so anyway, let me toss the ball back to you. That's kind of my view of the bubble. Talk about the bubble, man.
So I think that's one of them. And I wouldn't even say like, oh, this is the second bubble. I think that's the second bubble for this conversation. I mean, you can look back to when like digital really, you know, came into its own and was displacing analog as a bubble. And then the people who said, no, I'm going to stay analog, they essentially had to wait out that bubble. So it's like, okay, well, what do you do whenever you see something like that? And it's like, you have like several options. It's like, you can choose to wait it out. You can conform to do something. I think Atmos could have been a bubble. Mm-hmm. But I honestly think that they, I won't belabor on this, I think they went about it really wrong with how they released it. I mean, Apple just put out a memo in like April of, it was like 2021 or something. And then everyone, you know, was flocking. And it was like, are you going to do it or are you not? And so it's like, I think you saw like what could have potentially been, because you had the displacement of a paradigm shift. Like, there was significant momentum and, like, you know, there's definitely like a rise of prices, like euphoria that was coming in, people taking profit from this, people mm-hmm. panicking because, like, oh, I'm either part of this or I'm not part of this kind of thing. I'm going to be left behind. And it's like, or you just chose to stay in your lane. It's like, I'm going to do this. And so as far as, like, I think that there's, like, another part of this that is, like, I feel like AI will be a trigger for this.
Yeah.
I don't think that it is, you know, like, 100% of what's going to happen. But it's, like, I feel like the AI will be the equivalent to, like, the subprime lending of the housing boom.
Exactly.
And it's, like, that was, like, this potentially could be the tipping point. I don't, like, you can completely skip this episode and it would be fine. I'm not trying to be a canary in a coal mine, but it's like, what I am saying is the way that, and this is not at all a reflection of Sam, this is just reflection of what I'm saying. I feel like the way we are moving forward as far as like independent music is ridiculously unsustainable.
Yeah.
Because like when you take a step back and you look at the whole fabric of everything, let's look at Spotify, let's look at Apple Music, let's look at YouTube, let's look at anywhere that music is consumed, it's all the same thing. You have a lot of people who are entering the music industry, and it's never been easier to make music. It's never been easier to put out content. It's never been easier or quicker mm-hmm. to get something out into the world. So, like, you're having labels be like, hey, can we get this turned around today?
Yep.
We're going to try to get it up on TikTok tonight. And so it's like, this is how we live today. So there's very much an oversaturation as far as artists are concerned. I'm not saying that's bad. I think that everyone's art deserves to have its place and to, like, you know, have its audience and be heard as it is to be heard. But it's like, okay, what's also, like, what's the unsustainable part is that that people, for the most part, are no longer really making music. Or I'm sorry, no longer making money by making music.
Right.
And especially by relying on standard distribution methods alone. And so it's like, What's the current rate? You get like 1 million streams. How much money do you get, Sam?
It's about, for Spotify specifically, it's usually around $3,000 for every 1 million. But so that depends on premium versus, or like paid versus not paid location. It all shifts, but that's kind of like, if you go into Google and go through like the top stream converter sites, they're all around $3,000 for 1 million streams. And that's if you own everything, you know, 100%.
So people can't make money off of the distribution method. I feel like we're all also to a point where we're pretty disgusted about just being like data in an algorithm.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone is like slave to an algorithm where, like, to a degree, it's like you did have like major players, you know, way back when, say like, oh, these are the rules and whatnot. But if you figured out the rules, you could kind of, like, you know, work your way kind of around, and so that you could, you know, make some cash and, you know, make a name for yourself, as opposed to now it's like the algorithm changes just as often as people figure it out. And so you essentially have a game that can never be won.
Right.
That I'm not going to say it's rigged, but you're making $3,000 per 1 million streams. once again, depending on like where everything is. And so like all this amounts to is just a massive amount of unsustainability at the distribution level. And then you have this whole AI thing that I think will be able to create, like, you just, anyone can give this thing prompts. And I think you do, I think you will have lawsuits, essentially people suing for likeness, because it's like this thing, no AI right now that is public is to the point to where it is sentient and making its own music. And like music that's never existed before, of a style or genre that's never existed before this all came about. Also, it's like, as far as like AI is concerned, it has no reason to make it besides to amuse humans. So that's interesting as well. It's like, the argument would be, once an AI becomes, you know, self-aware, mm-hmm. why would it make music? Because it's just a waste of time.
Yeah.
It's one of like the arguments as far as like AI, like, is it going to wipe out humans? And it's from a point of like, why would we like dedicate all this land to farming? Like, why do we need farming? We don't need farming, because like farming doesn't make sense to an AI. It's like, it doesn't need food or any of this stuff. And so it's just like, yeah, okay, let's wipe this. Like, in its mind, it would just be like, yeah, let's wipe out, you know, this field and use it for more like AI, you know, things than things that it would need. This is such a rabbit hole. So I would say, as far as like the unsustainability, you have people trying to get into this at staggering rates. It's really awesome to see the people get into it. But as we talk to people and as we coach people through, it's like there is a bit of a moral question that I have to ask of like, yeah, they're going to be able to work, but it's like, then like you have the artists, it's like, are they going to be able to, you know, make a living off of this? And in a lot of cases, if they're not performing or something like that, it's like the answer is genuinely no. I have a handful of artists, because of some health complications, they cannot physically perform. And so it's like they have to essentially do other things for work. And it's like some of the most gorgeous music you've ever heard. And so, I mean, those are sure like some niche cases, but it doesn't necessarily dwindle down at any of the oversaturation, I mean, that there currently is. So I don't know. That's kind of where I am. Do you want to kind of talk on the whole race to the bottom and the potential like devaluation of kind of like what's here, Sam?
Yeah. Devaluation is like really important to me. And I've been saying, not that I created the word at all, we've been saying the word devaluation for a long time. We did, I think, that whole episode on Spotify and the devaluation of music. I think that was the title of it. Whenever that was, 3-4 years
if
ago.
If it's not, it should be.
I think I'm 99% sure we did that episode. If you want to look it up, Matt, while I'm talking.
Sure.
Or you can listen. Don't have to.
I love listening to
you. But I'm pretty sure we did an episode called Spotify and the Devaluation of Music, probably like 4 or 5 years ago. And the overview of that was very much...
Dang, episode 12.
12.
Spotify and the Devaluation of Music. There I was like, are. That's a fire title if we haven't done it
we yet. We were on it 6 years ago, 7 years ago. We've been talking about these things for 6-7 years. So now we're seeing... I'm positive that episode came true. Everything we talked about of how we're feeling. Because streaming royalties have basically just gone down. Also, cost of living has gone up. So that's always an equation. But I feel like every time a song comes out or every time a stream happens, it devalues a stream. And in that episode, I think we talked about when you first started Spotify, if you hit 1 million streams, it was kind of like, oh my gosh, I got 1 million streams. Now it's, you got to have 1 billion streams. 1 billion streams will turn ahead, you know, like, oh, that song got 1 billion streams. The problem, much like with our economy, I hope this episode just isn't so doom and gloom, but in the economy, your best friend for investing is usually time. And You know, once you start compounding and compounding at large numbers, then it's just like a freaking snowball. So with Spotify, say you just put out a song today, but you are 1.8 billion streams behind Drake, you know, on one of his songs. You will probably never catch up, even if you have a hit song. Like, you're already a billion plus streams behind. So he will continue to rack up streams. Now, of course, an artist could go away, but I feel like popular artists and longevity, I think there's more longevity right now for artists because of digital, and those will be the artists that did the hybrid. Like, they were pretty popular at the start of digital, and then they got in and took advantage of digital, or their label did, and they hit, like, that sweet spot. Just like with boomers and investing, this is not a knock on boomers, but boomers invested into the stock market at the golden.
It was like the best
time. The best time. The returns they have gotten over the last 30 years are unmatched. We will not get them. There is no way we can. It's not sustainable. You know, at the rate of, you know, new people coming to the earth and whatever, it's just, it's not possible. So that's a whole other thing. But, you know, I just feel like if music, and we kind of talked about this a while ago, if music is often, people say it's like a reflection of culture, the economy is, it doesn't feel sustainable. That whole like boomer thing of investing, they hit like the jackpot. Not only did they hit the jackpot, they now have, they're millions of dollars ahead of most people younger than them. And so the way compounding works, even if the market is good for, say, someone who's 20 and a boomer who's 70, the amount that the compound for the boomer is getting is going to just always be trumping the younger person. And so you're going to have in the economy, which you already were seeing it, because like the stock market is like fairly new as far as like the long-term view of history. It's not very old. Retirement is not very old. The idea of pension is not very old. 401k, not very old. These are not very, these are basically ideas that came into play for boomers. And they were new investment vehicles. Really great vehicles for them. But for everybody else, it's not going to be the same story. This moves back into Spotify. Those golden era artists on Spotify. What is funny about this, I don't know if you've noticed, but it just popped up a couple weeks ago, is Spotify now has classic Spotify artists playlists.
Huh?
These playlists are basically like these artists I'm talking about. It's Drake. It's artists over the last 10 years, 15 years that have basically hit dynamite on streaming. And they are now deemed classic Spotify artists because of how much they stream. And those are the people that are crushing and making a living off digital. They combined it with the old way, which was still making money, you know, via analog and via sales, you know, physical sales and doing lots of shows. And so I think once again, the indie people, people just getting into it, I don't want it to sound negative, but it's almost like we're a bit too late. You're a bit too late. It doesn't mean you can't blow up overnight. That's part of this equation, is like the lottery of this all, is everything I'm saying could be wrong. You could make a song tomorrow that does blow up, that does get 100 million streams. You could make a living. You could get signed, get an advance, and be on tour with Drake opening. Like, it is, it's possible. That's kind of like the game, or like the addiction, I feel like, of streaming and the devaluation of all this, is like the more you put out, the more chance you potentially have to get famous, get viral, get noticed. But that then makes people want to just keep buying lottery tickets. And so the more that happens, the odds as a whole get like, you're thinking, oh, I'm buying more tickets, so the odds are going in my favor, but everybody's buying more tickets. And so like the odds don't change very much. And if anything, within music, it just creates more of like the product is disposable. If you want something to be valuable, this is something that's interesting about like Bitcoin. There is a finite amount of Bitcoin that people have seemed to deem valuable. We've all, not all, but many people are believing in the myth of crypto, just like we believe in the myth of fiat and paper money, that it has value. you have to have collective myths to function as a society, which is fine. But within Bitcoin, with the halvings that happen, we're about to have one here in April, I believe. That means that essentially the amount of Bitcoin that is available and is mining essentially gets cut in half. So production gets cut in half. And I think it's like miner rewards. Crypto people out there, I'm probably getting this slightly wrong of how I'm presenting it, but essentially it's creating every 3-4 years, it creates more scarcity of the coin, essentially. And with that, then the value we see every time there's a halving, the value of Bitcoin goes up, which is right now. It just surpassed its all-time high this week, leading up to the halving in the next 4 weeks, probably.
The crypto bros are losing their mind. Told you to just hold it,
exactly. And you know what? They might be right for like the next 20 years of the halvings that happen. Because all the Bitcoin, 93% of all Bitcoin has been mined. So there's 7% left. But the last 7% is going to take, I think it was about 103 years to get there, to get this last 7% out because of the halving and how that works. So all the crypto bros, of course, are like, you got 100 years to like really crank this out.
Gary V.
Yeah.
You got 100 years, man. It's plenty of time.
Exactly. Plenty of time. You're not old. Anyway, devaluation, it's everywhere.
Fall on your bullshit, man.
Yeah.
Get to mining now.
Your song is just not as valuable, you know, as it used to be. You know, 30 years ago, you make a song. It's got some weight and value to it. There was an association of value and cost to having a vinyl or a physical product. Now your song is worth nothing. You know, labels are signing people based on their following, not their music. That's how they're doing it. They've been doing that. A&Rs are looking for people with likes, attention, subscribers, you know, people they can do basically brand deals with, paid advertisement with, and crank the dial on that. And then music is just one facet of the brand and the entertainment in which that person offers. So it's a really interesting and almost like a grieving time, I think, because you currently really can't just be an artist. You know, your song is just not going to bring in enough money to live off of realistically, outside of if you pivot and create a niche audience, which I think is probably part of this conversation and part of what will be interesting. And the hope is, for me, if I can give hope for this episode, is that we as humans will finally sit down and think through, what does it mean to be human and does that matter to us? And I think the answer will be yes. I think it will be yes. And I think then, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if there'll be a strike, if people will pull their music and do a different platform or just be like, I'm selling physical. It's just going to be so interesting, but it does feel very much like this devaluation race to the bottom, even within our own industry, you know, engineers undercutting themselves for price. You know, it's just all so unsustainable. And when I'm on those forums or like Facebook groups, most of the people on there are complaining about what we're talking about. You know, they can't get enough work, they can't charge enough, you know, all that jazz. And there's like pushback on it, you know, with all of that, of there's a million reasons why you might not be getting paid the rate you deserve, you know. But the more we all, I do know this, the more we all participate in the devaluation of music, the worse it will get for everyone. Like, I know that to be true, which is why I'm such a big believer in like everybody should raise their rates always. If everybody in theory within the music world say they pull their music from Spotify and then we say, no, we're not going to give away this music essentially. If you want it, you got to come and get it. You got to pay a price. Most people will be like, well, labels will just find people that are willing to sacrifice everything, you know, which is kind of what they've done for the last 20 years anyway. People signing really terrible deals. Doesn't mean they don't get rich and famous, but most of what they've made is probably a fraction of what it was worth. So it's a complicated topic, but I do not see us able to sustain an industry with the way it's going. You're just seeing a widening gap between those that have a billion streams and those who can't get 10 fans to listen. So anyway, that's a long thing, but I'm going to hand it back to you. And I think we have like 5 or 10 minutes left for this one. So Matt, I'll let you chat and take us home.
Oh, I mean, I think like, okay, where do we go from here since we've depressed everyone for the past 35, 40 minutes? Is it's like, okay, well, what's like, what's on the other side of this? Because like, it's, I don't even think it's a question of like, oh, the water's starting to, you know, like trickle over like the edge of the waterfall. One of the nice things about waterfalls, though, is that they are beautiful to watch. And so it's like, it's like, it, kind of, it could be an amusing thing.
Grab your popcorn.
It, yeah, it's the Michael Jackson gif. Like, you're just, you know, sitting there just chewing, like eating your popcorn. What can be done? I don't really think anything at this point as far as the music landscape today and the way that things are being developed. I think that things, it's like, what's the takeaway from this? I don't really know. It's more like, do I think that musical people, like left-brained people, super creative people should stop making music? No, because it's not in your nature to stop being creative. And it's like the things that you make are genuinely like beautiful and like worthy of being listened to and heard. However, it's like I feel like realizing that this is like a cycle and realizing that, you know, as cyclical things do, it's like we always come back to like a home base. And the best part about the home base of like people who are left-brained creative people is it all comes back to human interaction. And what do we do? We should look at other cycles. Let's take a look at, say, the photography industry. We don't have to go back overly far. Let's say to 35 millimeter film, the little cassette rolls you would have and put in an analog camera. I mean, even just a disposable camera. You know, you do those. You take it to a photo lab. You have your photos developed, and come around the late 90s, 1996, 1999, you had Eastman Kodak essentially declare bankruptcy right around the time the digital camera was kind of making its, you know, appearance. And what put the digital camera away? You had, for the most part, the iPhone. Or let's just say any smartphone. I would say the iPhone probably first would be my ignorant opinion. And it's like, oh, yeah, now you can have tens of thousands of photos in your pocket at any time you need. And it's like, well, then why the heck am I so attracted to my 35 millimeter that I only get 36 shots with, and I have to, like, physically store these and, oh, no, I got to go look at these pictures when I get home kind of thing. And it's like, it's the most inconvenient way to do it. It costs a lot of money. The cameras aren't cheap. The lenses aren't cheap. Nothing about it's cheap. Like, you find a film that you like, and then it's like, oh, well, we're discontinuing that one. It's like, ah, crap. And so, but it's like, there's something just like tangible when you're holding that photo, and like, even like when you're taking that photo and capturing that moment, it's not something of like, oh, I'm going to go and look at this immediately. It's funny. I'll take a photo and my kids will be like, oh, Dad, let me see it. And so I'll show them the back of the camera and you'll see, it'll say like Portra 400, like the film stock that I have like loaded in the back. And, they're like, oh, I don't see anything. And I was like, yeah, but it's in there. And then we'll go to the developing place, and we'll get it all put together 24 hours later, go pick up the color film. If it's black and white, you got to wait like 10 days. It's a catastrophe. So it's like, you have that. That's a full cycle. Look at like music distribution methods. You know, you go vinyl and reel to reel to cassette to CD. I mean, I'm skipping some stuff. I'm not going to really like belabor on, oh, was the mini disc a good format? But it's like, okay, let's just say cassette to CD. We'll just, I suppose, let's talk about what, like, you know, went in your car as a format. And then that went to the little MP3, like, sticks. And you could plug headphones into it. It's like, yeah, I got 10 songs on this little stick. And it's like you had to buy, like, the album, like, on that, like, goofy thing. And that didn't really hang around a long time. And then you have, well, the MP3 player. And then you have the iPod that can, you know, you can store 10,000 songs in your pocket. It's like, well, that's cool. Then, you know, as a kid, you're on, like, LimeWire giving your computer some venereal disease. And, yeah, it's like LimeWire was, like, the best thing for Norton antivirus, I swear.
Truly.
And then, like, you know, you have the iPhone. And so now you essentially have all this, like, capability in your pocket. But then everyone's like, well, hold on. MP3s and all this stuff, it's like you're really taking away a lot of the transient detail, a lot of the gorgeousness that, you know, CD resolution really was able, resolution and playback was able to really bring about. And even though it was only, you know, like 44/116, we still use 44/116 every day, at least a handful of us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still a super robust format, still a good sounding format. Everything's kind of moving more towards high res, but it went from MP3, and then all of a sudden these machines that hadn't been used in forever, record lathes and everything, it's like everyone decided, hey, let's go press this record again. Some of my favorite records from, you know, the early 2000s, I go and I look for records and it's like, oh, well, they never made the records because they weren't making records at that time.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, what a great time to be a mastering engineer with like who held on to a lathe or found one inexpensively or was able to get it figured out and hopefully was able to find parts, just like piecing a handful of them together. And then it's like now you have the consumer once again consuming vinyl, and just how, and it's not even that it's a like superior format. It has its pros, it has its cons, but at its core, it has tangibility. It has the connection to the human. And so I feel like anything in regards to a bubble, and once again, let's just kind of like talk about, you know, displacement and paradigm shift, and it's like new format changes. I think we're about to see a new format change, or at least a new way of that music's being put out. And it's going to be put out faster, and it's going to be worth less, not worth less, but it's going to be worth less money because people aren't actually making it. And we're going to have to learn how to live in a world with that. So I do think that this is kind of like an interesting tipping point. And it's like, okay, well, how do you survive this kind of stuff? And I think you have two ways in how you survive it. Well, you have three ways. You can hunker down. You can get really close to labels and the people who still know the importance of, I'm not going to say that labels like appreciate people, but I will say that like labels know like the importance of a mastering engineer. And it's like if you're doing Atmos work, you're more than likely working on back catalog stuff. And it's like, you know, good on you. You're getting like, you're doing like really neat work on all these really like groundbreaking records. And it's like, but you're more than likely doing it really close to a label, or you're doing it so that the artist can kind of get like, you know, playlisted by like a label or a streaming service that may require it. And it's like, I don't want to at all like I know that like, you know, I'll like throw shade on some of that, but it's like I won't negate that it is important work. And I think anything that anybody's willing to pay for is important work. And so you can get close to labels. You can get close to people who still recognize like what you do as like relevant. I don't think labels are going out of their way to use Lander or any of these robo mastering services, like whoever makes them. I don't think they're going to be using like the Lorison mastering console or the BX, whatever, Master Desk or any of those like kind of plugins just to, you know, get stuff across the line. They still value the opinion of a mastering engineer and the non-biased nature of the mastering engineer. And then the other way, the indie way, how do you survive, not survive, like how do you, you know, get to the other side of that? And it's essentially get ridiculously close to people and get ridiculously close to community, create a community of like-minded people that they do appreciate, you know, like you, people go to these studios because these studios will still exist. I think that like any boom, I do think that you'll go through a phase of let's call it like a pruning phase where like some people will decide to stay in, some people will decide to get out. But I think that if you do kind of form like collectives of people who really appreciate, you know, each other and the tangibility of what each other is capable of creating and putting out into the world, I think that that's great. As far as the distribution method, I think that's yet to be determined on like how that's going to happen. It's like, you know, Spotify has a $51 billion market cap, but one of the amusing thoughts is like, how much money does it actually have? You have a bill that's going before the U.S. Congress of like, oh, we're going to pay artists more money. And it's like, well, how much more money? It's like, what is it? Labels own 70% of Spotify. It's like you have all the offices that Spotify has and all the stuff it takes to keep Spotify running. It's like, do you actually think that that money is actually there? You see 51 billion, you see, oh, it's a corporation. It's like, yeah, but it's like, that's all, you know, market cap. That's all like, who the hell knows what's actually there? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, I don't think there's any money there. I think it's like, I honestly think it's Fort Knox. I think most of it, like, I don't know. If you think Fort Knox is empty, that's what I'm hinting at. I think like, yeah, it's like, why would I have a hidden pile of gold when the thing that says that's surrounded by the military that says there's gold in here, why would that not be sufficient enough? And then I'm going to go I'm going to go use my gold. And now I just doubled my money by putting a bunch of guys around a building that I say there's gold in. I was like, yeah, sure. And so it's like, as far as Spotify, I think that I kind of think the house is empty as far as like what's in the coffers. And so, oh, let's go get the artist more money. And so I think you'll need in coming out of that, coming out of whatever is about to come, I think you will hit a paradigm shift. And I think 6 years ago, even when we were hinting at this, I think we said, you know, there needs to be a paradigm shift. And I think people are frustrated. There just needs to be another way to, you know, put all this stuff out. So I don't know. It's not necessarily an uplifting episode, but it's like, as far as, you know, what's going on in the world, it's like, you know, it's not always like bubbly and cheery. It's
right.
Like, hey, let's take a hard look at what's going on. And, you know, is there a place for change? And I think there's a lot of place for change. And a lot of people, you know, are able to make significant change in like times of like duress in industry. But I don't think that a lot of people are talking about a bubble in the music industry, which it's like when you look at all the signs, it's like all roads are kind of pointing to Rome. And this is one of the problems with Rome is that it was very easy to take over. It's very easy to do like commerce and whatnot. But at the same time, all roads led to Rome. And so in good times, that was great. But in bad times, it yeah. meant a war path in one direction. And so, yeah, I'm interested to see what's on the other side of it. But I do think it's a bit of a waiting game. Yeah, sorry for the Debbie Downer episode. You have anything else to say, Sam?
No, not really. I think for this
we'll
episode,
see you at the end, if we want to put out this episode,
it's just like an awareness. Like this is part of life, you know. Like there is, you know, essentially hard times in life. I'm sure our audience has experienced those. To act like it's not real or not happening is naive and usually leaves you in a worse place. And I hope. Yeah, I hope this is an awareness and just for people to have their antennas go off, not in a panic way, aware but not alarmed, and start to think through even within your own career, like what would it look like to do something differently? You know, is there a better way to
not rearrange? Like leave what you're doing?
Yeah, not leave what like, you're doing, unless it feels like the right move for you, but. You know, is there a way we can reorder and rearrange the way we create music so that more people thrive? You know, is that an option? And I think the answer is yes. but I think it will take a community and us as an industry to at some point take a stand and say, you know what, I'm tired of undercutting my fellow creator. You know, I'm tired of, as artists, giving away our music for free. We have so much power. And I know it's scary in theory to be like, well, I don't want to lose the very little bit that I have. But this is, but that's how, you know, in every other industry and kind of the history cycle is like, it's going to end up crashing anyway. Like what you have is irrelevant and not enough anyway. So why don't we try something different?
Well, it's more like it's, boom, like it's not even that explodes. It's like irrelevant. It's not even that it's irrelevant. It's that it's not appreciated.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really great way of saying it. But that's all. That's all I have. Just be aware and start thinking and message Matt and I. You got ideas, thoughts? You're hearing something? You're feeling something? Let's have a conversation. Let's talk.
Yeah.
That's it.
So at the end of this cherry episode, I don't even know if I'm going to do all the promo and everything. I would love for you to share this episode.
Yeah.
I really just want like opinions. I want a conversation to be started. And if you think that this is wrong, then, I mean, reach out, let us know. And we'd love to have a dialogue and like compare what we're seeing versus, well, you know, what you're seeing. And Sam and I are very much aware that we could be an echo chamber. So it's like, let's make sure that we're not that. I also don't want to like ensue panic.
Right.
But at the same time, let's, you know, take a very good look at like where we are and where we stand. So as an industry. So I'm interested regardless of what comes about. So I won't do the normal promo like I do because I'd love for you to share this. But if you don't, I completely understand. I more just want opinions. And so, yeah. If you hear the sweet beat in the background, that was made by the one and only Sam Moses. If you wouldn't mind just telling him thank you for putting this episode together, I would appreciate it. Your thanks is a extension of my gratitude. And I could not be more thankful for Sam. So, Sam, thanks for, you know, entertaining this conversation.
And maybe
next time we'll have a more cheery topic. So, anyway, morning, afternoon, evening, whatever y'all are having, have a darn good one. Catch y'all in the next episode. Cue the music.
Yay!